This is the Boundless Pursuit Podcast, a show highlighting the purity of the experience without limitation. Each week, we'll bring anglers as diverse as the fish they chase, whether it be from your backyard or your bucket list. Freshwater, saltwater, conventional gear, or fly, we're bringing stories and perspectives from fishermen from all walks of life, from across the country and globe. In the digital age, authentic communication and networking is critical, and I'd love to hear from you about show suggestions, potential guests, or general feedback. And you can reach me at boundlesspursuitfishing@gmail.com or at my website, www.boundless-pursuit.com. That's where you'll find the entire collection of written articles, podcast episodes, and media. I deeply value the feedback, ratings, reviews, and support of my listeners, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm your host, David Graham. Now let's get on to today's episode. Since moving to South Florida over 5 years ago, I've really enjoyed the opportunity to chase some of this state's unique exotic species. Confined by a climate barrier, South Florida's subtropic climates have kept populations of peacock bass, snakeheads, tilapia, and various cichlids contained for decades. And each brings a different challenge and unique character to the table that should be exciting to anglers looking for some variety. But there is one exotic species that has really captivated me the most, the clown knifefish. This is the ultimate non-native oddball species and arguably our most unique. And today's guest is Eric Planer of the Flow Bass YouTube channel and guide service, where he specializes in putting clients on some of these unique exotic species, and he displays them on his awesome YouTube channel. And there's a growing interest among clients seeking to check this bizarre transplant off the bucket list. And so in this conversation, Eric breaks down the how, where, and when to do that on artificial lures and baits alike. This is an awesome angler, guide, and video maker, giving the 411 on one of the coolest exotic species in the country, the clown knifefish. This is Eric Planer of the Flow Bass Guide Service and YouTube channel. You know, I'm not Mr. Tech Guy. It's like I have to have like cues that let me know that this stuff's happening. Go around. There's the first cameo. Here come the kids. The whole neighborhood's in my backyard. Sitting here yelling. I edit that part out, me yelling at the kids. Anyway, now I lost my train of thought. But Eric, man, I kind of got on the trail of your channel, your stuff, through a previous guest, that being Justin Woodrum. I don't know if you realize that that was the connection, but
yeah, he kind of told me that he was on a podcast and gave me a shout out. So
yeah, man. So that's kind of the beauty of this whole thing, is it's like really let me connect with some awesome people. And then like every time I get a guest on, it seems like some of their people jump in and I'm like, oh man, look at this guy. Oh, look what this guy does. But you're right here in my backyard, and you sort of exist in a niche of fishing that I'm very interested in. Now, I haven't been in Florida for too long, 4 years, 5 years. I've lost track of time, but
Almost a Floridian. Honorary Floridian.
I got a ways to go, but you and him were out doing the snakehead thing. And now snakehead's been kind of a recurring theme on this podcast. I can't help it. I'm all about the snakeheads. I'm all about the exotic species. But in scrolling through your page, I saw that, you know, not only are you fishing for these things, you're also guiding for them. So I'm like, that adds a unique layer to this, because you're like an ambassador of sorts. You know what I mean? You're leading people to these fish. You're promoting these fish. Technically it makes you a professional at fishing for them. But
I would use that term loosely, but absolutely, you know.
Well, the one that catches my eye, and I've caught them, but I feel like it's, in my opinion, it's like, I go between snakeheads and these clown knifefish are like the two exotics in the state that have got me like captivated. But the clown knifefish is the one that really stands out. And so I'm kind of interested in how you got on the trail of that species of fish from the standpoint of guiding. Like, what is the interest level? you know, and the people that are reaching out to you year over year wanting to come fish with you, how many of them are interested in these clown knife fish? I want to talk about these clown knife fish.
Yeah, they're such a unique fish. I don't know, man. There's a lot of adjectives you can use to describe them. I mean, they're like ninjas. Some people say they're secretive. But yeah, so they're really interesting. They do a lot of unique things. And the reason that the snakeheads are a little more prevalent in people's thought processes is because they're a little more spread out across the state, where these clown knife fish, you really only find them in a few bodies of water. I mean, they're in some interconnecting systems, but for the most part, I mean, there's one place to go. And I mean, that's, you know, it's no secret. It's the Lake Ida Osborne chain. That's where they're just centralized. And like, if you want to go out and catch these things, that's where you go. But in terms of, you know, interest level with clients and just anglers in general, it definitely not as much as the snakeheads, I would say. I think they're a cooler fish than snakeheads, just yeah. From all the weird stuff that they do and how they're shaped and everything. But, you know, just because of that kind of smaller range, I think that's why they're not really on so many people's radar. But I mean, they do all the right things that fish do when you hook them, and they should be on people's radar.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the sort of elephant in the room is the fact that, like so many of these fish, when we talk about snakeheads, I'm sure we'll talk about peacock bass, which is maybe viewed in a different light. But when you talk snakeheads and you talk clown knife fish, you know, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Whoa, what are you talking about? Like, these are invasive species. You know, these are harmful fish. But you keep saying that they're more like confined to one area. But there's also this perception that they have the propensity to take over, to push out native fish, to proliferate out of control. I guess the things that need to be asked is, like, one, where did they come from? How long have they been here? And like, what's stopping them from taking over all of Florida? Because it's like some people listening from other places can be like, well, y'all are condoning these non-native fish that should be eradicated and killed. So I want to know, like, where your mind's at with that. But there's some education that needs to be established first of, you know, those kinds of things, like where they come from, all of that.
Right. Yeah. I just want to preference to everybody that I'm not a biologist. Like, all of my findings are merely through observation only. So, you know, plus, you know, I've spent countless hours on the water. You know, I've caught hundreds of these things. So that's where all my, you know, basis is coming from. So I just wanted to preference that for everybody. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I have a pretty good idea of what's going on for the most part. You know, in terms of like when they started showing up, that's kind of up in the air because there's no documentation whatsoever. You know, I've even reached out to FWC to ask them, like, hey, have you guys done any studies or anything like that? Is there like a first reported case? And FWC is really weird when it comes to invasive species, snakeheads in general, and these clowns. They literally have sent me an email that says, like, sorry, we decline to answer your questions.
That's weird.
Like, what? Like, okay, I'm just trying to get some more information, and they're just not being helpful. So you know, with the snakeheads, I do know that they are doing a little bit of research, but it's not a lot, and they certainly haven't published anything.
Yeah.
So in terms of the clowns, I mean, there's quite a few stories going around, but the one that I'm more inclined to believe is I've heard from like an OG fishing guide down here in the Southeast Florida area, Butch Constable. He's claimed that in like the mid to late 90s is when he first started boating those things. You know, he's been guiding out on that chain for forever. He's the original guy. And so that's kind of what he said. You know, whether that's true or not, I mean, I don't know, but for sure, like what's been documented with, you know, people actually catching these and posting them on social media is, you know, after Hurricane Wilma, which I have in my notes here, was October 5th, 2005 is when we had Hurricane Wilma. And I don't, David, I don't know if you're familiar with that whole situation, but that was a really fast moving storm when it blew across the state, and it just took out power in areas for up to a couple months in some areas. So kind of the running theory is that there's a lot of people that were living on those channel lakes that had clown knife fish in their aquariums. Mm-hmm. And because they were without power for so long, they just released them into the lake. And, you know, that's with most of these invasive species. I mean, the aquarium trade is the culprit down here in South. So they started, you know, really, we saw a lot of people documenting these things, you know, shortly after that. 3 to 5 years after Hurricane Wilma came through is when we really started to see a lot more people consistently catching these things. And, you know, they didn't really pop on my radar until like 6 or 7 years ago is when I really started gaining interest in them. And kind of after the whole, like, you know, invasive craze of the snakeheads was like dying down, and just people got more educated, myself included. That's when I started looking at these other different species, and, you know, these things can grow up to, you know, in the teens when we're talking about size and poundage. And, you know, that's like, why would you not want to try and chase down one of those things?
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the first ones I wanted to see when I got here, because, you know, you go down that rabbit hole and it's like, I think the snakehead may be more exciting just if you're, you know, I think it's the blow up with the snakeheads. It's just, it's the way they approach a lure. Maybe it's a little bit more visually stimulating. Like, you know,
There's nothing better than a fish blowing up on a top of water, especially like when the snakeheads are spawning and they're guarding fry. I mean, they will fully like launch themselves out of the air to crush a swim bait or a frog. It's insane.
Yeah. And it may just be my ignorance or inexperience speaking, but like, I found like the snakeheads, like, you know, I could pattern them pretty quickly, but for whatever reason, like the clown knife fish, I can't catch them on a lure to save my life. And I know you have, so that side of it, I'm very curious about, but I can come across them rolling and, you know, I know they're there because they have that habit of, you know, I don't know if they're bimodal breathers or whatever, like a gar, or a tarpon or whatever. Like, I don't know what the purpose of them rolling is. But it's like, you know, that they're there sometimes in big numbers. Dude, I'm telling you, I've gone there with little paddle tails. I'm gone there with hard plastics, soft plastics, everything, casting all in and around them. And I'm like, what is like the determining factor whether they want to bite or not? Is it low light conditions? Oh, it's too sunny. Bluebird days. They don't want to bite. Like, I haven't done it yet. I haven't pulled it off. I think I just give up too easy.
I'll have to get you on the boat and check off that box for sure.
I have no shame in saying that I just throw live bait at them. I'm throwing shiners at them.
Yeah.
But
that's perfectly fine. I mean, that's how I caught my first one, which, you know, is a pretty interesting story, I guess, at least in my mind, because I was so amped up. But
yeah,
in terms of, you know, feeding these fish, it took me a while to kind of figure them out as well. And, but, you know, their feeding patterns are really weird. Like, it's so strange. You will just be around them. Just like you said, you'll see them roll. They're actually facultative air breathers. So they're like tarpon. They don't need to come up and roll, but they just, you know, it supplements their O2 intake. Mm. But I mean, you'll be all around them, and, you know, you can have 6 rods in the water with live baits and you see hundreds of rolls around you and nothing's happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, for whatever reason, when one feeds, they all will start to feed. I've had multiple times where one person hooks up on my boat and all, you know, 2-3 other rods go off almost simultaneously.
Hmm.
Really, really interesting. And I don't know, like when you catch them and you're holding them, you'll actually feel those fish drum. So I don't know if that's kind of, if that drumming fires off the other ones or not. Who knows? You know, I don't speak clown knife fish. I wish I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, they'll start to drum, and so it's nuts. But you kind of, when you're fishing artificial with those things, you kind of just have to be patient and grind it out, because you will, especially if they're rolling, they will eventually eat. Now, when I typically start my trips out on the lake, I will catch quite a few first thing in the morning, low light situations, and then vice versa, late in the afternoon, when that sun's setting, the golden hour is really great too.
Oh, okay. And,
you know, your chances of getting a bite are pretty high, but then I've had bluebird sky days where they just feed all throughout the day, no matter what. Like you can go from spot to spot to spot, catch a few, go to the next spot, catch a few, and just go, you know, you can almost patter them off of certain pieces of structure or depth throughout the whole lake system. You know, once you kind of figure out where most of them are wanting to hold, you can just do that on those days and, you know, have a kick-ass day on the water.
Yeah, because my only observations of them, like, that really got me curious was I'd spent some time over there. It's probably the last time I was on your side of the state, but I spent the night there, slept out on my Jeep, stuff like that. And I was mostly looking for snakeheads, and I wanted to find snakeheads like at night. So I kept using like a spotlight just to, you know, I wanted to see the fish for a little bit. And I got to this area where it was like they have these like distinctive glowing red eyes, just like a tarpon. But it was like they were in real shallow water and they were everywhere. I mean, they're moving, darting around like crazy. You could see the eyes from like 50 yards away. So it got me wondering. I was like, to me, that indicates that they're probably more of like a low light conditioned feeder in the first place, maybe even nocturnal. Have you tried fishing for them at night at all? Because I mean, they were all over the place, super active in the middle of the night.
That brings up another topic as well that some people have taken advantage of. But, you know, for the most part, when I first started chasing after these fish, and the little bit of information that's out there that's available, is they say that it's a nocturnal fish. And especially, I think that comes from the aquarium trade, because a lot of these people will only observe the clowns in their tanks feeding when the lights are off. And I think that could just be a stress thing, because it's definitely, you know, it's been proven by everyone that targets these things that you can catch them any time of the day. I used to only go out at night when I first started, because that's what everybody told me. Like, if you're gonna catch them, nighttime is the time. And I've had mixed results with that. But yeah, like what you described, at nighttime, they come up shallow and they kind of, you know, they might be moving around. A lot of the times I've seen them, you can just shine a flashlight on them and they will just be posted up, not moving.
Okay.
It's crazy. It's just like, it's a turkey shoot. If you're a bow hunter, that's, I mean, there was a group of fellas that came from out of state and exploited that. And it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
That's funny. I don't have a lot of bullet points of things to cover, but I did very specifically write down recent spats of people bow fishing for them, because it seemed like that is a weird one for me, being that I grew up in Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, some in South Carolina.
That's part of the culture over there.
Bow fishing is a much bigger deal out there. And, you know, I've always had an affinity for like non-traditional species of fish, gar. Yeah. Bowfin or mudfish, whatever you want to call them. So it's like, you know, I've had these interactions and, you know, we all have things to say about bow fishing, but it doesn't seem like a big culture here. So then when I see these people coming, I was shocked at how up in arms and defensive and upset the angling community got at these bow fishermen. And I'm like, that is interesting, because now y'all see some of the crap that I've dealt with everywhere I've ever gone. But they were just shooting them and throwing them up on the banks and thinking that they were doing a service to the state of Florida. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's just, you know, I understand probably where their mindset was, these group of individuals. Because honestly, they're not doing anything wrong. I mean, they can harvest as many clown knife fish as they want. They're not breaking any laws. They are an invasive species at the end of the day. Or, you know, I don't like to use the word invasive. It's more, I like to use introduced, because you know, to me, like, invasive means they're
just non-native.
Or non-native. That's another way to put it. They, you know, the three or four gentlemen that most recently caused up caused a big storm of hatred. I mean, they were here. I don't know if they were, if they fished more than one night, but 100%, it was, you know, obviously no less than one. And judging by the photos, I mean, they cleaned house. They must have taken, the three of them must have taken over 100 con night fish in, you know, a few hours. And that's just, you know, it's funny because they, you know, like what you observe, they just, they go shallow and they're gigantic. They're like, it's a gigantic dinner plate. You know, how can you miss when you shoot, when you go and attempt to shoot them with a bow? But it's just not, it's not part of the culture here. And I don't know if they were ready for the backlash that they received. I mean, it was literally the next day. And I think the backlash caused them to leave and they didn't stay a second night because it was bad. We're not the people that are, you know, raised down here. We just, we don't practice that. So it's a huge culture shock. And yeah, I mean, it's especially with the guides, a lot of guides were upset because, you know, our mindset is like, well, why would you remove the resource that literally puts money in your pocket? You know, and that's kind of my thinking. You know, I don't hate the guys for what they did at all. I mean, they were well within their legal rights. You know, they bought fishing licenses. They came down here and, you know, practiced their constitutional rights, you know? So, I mean, it's not, you know, I don't have any hatred towards them, but wow, it was, you know, and I'm a little embarrassed because like part of the South Florida angling community, they issued those guys some death threats, which I think that that's just overboard. So, you know, it's a little embarrassing to be, you know, part of that community that would stoop so low as to do something like that. But
you know, well, you're always going to have like extreme takes on either side. That topic's come up a few times. I tend to be a little bit more, you know, towards the center instead of like taking up arms and be like, ban it. It should be illegal. But it's, you know, it's when it's justifiable in that, like you're utilizing the fish, eating it, I don't know, utilizing the body rather than strewing it across the ground, leaving them at boat ramps, leaving them on the bank. That's when it's like, now we're getting weird here because, you know, if the idea that is really... when the idea is that I'm doing this for conservation, that I'm a vigilante conservationist and I'm here to rescue you. Well, first you need to establish the fact this is beyond rescue. That's the things like,
I think, even want to be rescued. You ask that question.
Yeah. Well, I think first people need to come to the acceptance that snakeheads and clown knifefish will never be gone. It can't happen.
There's no way. It
can't be done without being done at the expense of everything else. So once you have established that unavoidable fact, the only thing that's left is acceptance. All right. You know, the only course of action left is coping, adapting, utilizing, which obviously y'all have done. But yeah, the bow fishing side, I remember seeing that post. I was like, oh, I wonder what, you know, I wonder if he's encountered any of that. I don't like to turn it into the bow fishing bashing deal. You know,
no, not at all.
It's like, I mean, there's, it's like everything there's else. If they'd have taken him eating them, it's like we wouldn't even have him be
down here.
When they're utilized, it's like, well, we can't get upset when people are utilizing the resource, but it's, you know, what I saw was fish laying in the bushes, corpses strewn across the grass, which is,
you know, that strikes a nerve with me big time.
It's a sanitary issue as well, because then it starts to attract pests. It's just unsightly. It smells. Now you got all kinds of, you know, it just sets off a chain reaction that just makes everything unpleasant for everybody. Most of those areas are pretty residential.
Yeah, the last thing I want is when I'm, you know, walking the bank, if I'm doing a foot mission for snakeheads, I don't want to be smelling dead snakehead at all. It's like, you know, respect for your fellow angler, for your community. So, you know, absolutely no problem. If someone wants to keep clown knifefish or snakehead, like, great, you know, go for it. But, you know, if you're not going to utilize the fish, at least dispose of it at home, however you will. But just don't leave them over on the bank. I mean, that's just... You know, you're disrespecting not only yourself, but everybody else.
Now, your experience with clown knife fish, when did you catch the first one? And like, was it on accident? or was it like, I know that they're here, I'm trying to catch them? Like when did you first encounter one of these things?
Yeah, it was kind of an accident, because so the way that day started was, I had a lot of time off from my previous job, and I had already kind of set in motion, you know, the wheels of progress to start my guide business. And I knew that, you know, my first thought was originally that I was going to make Lake Ida and Lake Osborne kind of one of my mainstays and one of the areas that I wanted to fish. So I wanted to figure that place out and kind of just get a lay of the land. And this was, you know, I want to say like 6 years ago. And of course, what was on my mind was the clown knife fish, for sure. Like I wanted to figure out what makes those things tick, so I can, because not a lot of people actually request to catch those. I mean, there's some guides that are known for it, and a lot of people just, they book them direct, which is fine. That's, you know, more, my hat goes off to them for creating that business model, because that's awesome. So, you know, I still wanted to catch a clown knife fish just to check it off the list and, you know, have it as like a bonus bycatch for when I do get clients on the boat. So I set off first thing in the morning. You know, I was stressing about catching bait because, you know, for on that system, if you're not throwing the native forage, which is threadfin shad, I mean, you're in for, you could be in for a pretty rough day. I mean, those fish, every fish on that lake, whether it's the clowns, the peacocks, largemouth, the hybrid bass, they are so keyed in on the shad, it's not even funny.
Okay.
So not having that in your arsenal, you know, you could have a pretty rough day in the water. So, you know, fortunately, I was able to bait up. The bait was in abundance that day. And so after that, I was like, all right, it's first light. I started fishing for them. And then 5 hours later with zero bites, I'm like, okay, what, you know, what the heck? And I, you know, I was making a YouTube video at the time. So I had to switch gears and I didn't want my day to be wasted. And I, my patience at that point was running pretty thin. I just wanted to bend the rod. So I made a move and I just switched gears to, you know, something I know very well, peacock bass fishing. So I made my way a couple miles north of the lake and I was fishing these docks and I pitched, I had a nice gumdrop size threadfin shad and I pitched that thing under a dock and it immediately shot out from the dock. And I was like, okay. Oh, and me, and I guess this has a little relevance, but it was, we were in the month of August when this happened.
Okay.
So, and the clown knife fish, they're kind of wrapping up their spawning. They like to do that during the summertime months. I didn't know that at the time, just through fishing is when I finally learned that. So shad shoots out from under the dock and I figure something chased it right out of there. A couple seconds later, I didn't feel the thump because I was live. I was kind of free lining it, but I saw my line jump and then it immediately started ripping line off of the spool. And I was like, holy cow, this is, like, I got something, like this thing's booking it. So give it a few seconds, close the bail, you know, typical reel down, point the rod tip at the fish. And when you feel that pressure, just a nice sweep. And so rod instantly doubles over. I'm using a medium heavy. This thing's doubled over and I knew I had a good fish on. And then a couple seconds later, it's doing these like really big, slow head shakes. And I was like, this is not a peacock bass.
Yeah.
So instantly in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, don't get excited just yet. We don't know what it is. So I'm fighting it and I'm fighting it for, you know, a few more seconds. And the line starts coming up, like coming straight out of the water. And I knew, then I knew it was a clown because they are notorious for jumping.
Yeah.
And so the line rockets up and this, you know, I mean, I weighed it. I know what it weighed after the fact, but this, you know, 8 pound clown was doing somersaults in the air and, you know, my heart's beating out of my chest. I'm like, this is what I came here for. It was awesome. And I, you know, I was trying to net the thing and these clown knife fish are so crazy because they don't have like your typical, like caudal fin, like other fish.
Yeah.
It's this, you know, I, I don't know the terminology for it, but it's basically this big undulating fin on the bottom of their body. And that allows them to swim forward and backwards. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to scoop this thing out of the net, and it literally swam backwards out of the net as I'm trying to scoop it. Like, so hilarious. But I think it was harder to get it in the net than it was to actually get it to the boat. But I landed it, and it was pretty surreal.
Yeah. Pretty surreal. That's kind of like the running thing. Like, you know, not a lot of people know about a clown knife fish, but the few that have at least heard a little bit all hear the tales of them swimming backwards. Like, oh, they can swim backwards. They can swim backwards. And, you know, it's an interesting fight. And I recall, like, the first few that I hooked, I'm like, it doesn't feel like any other fish, really. I can't relate them to much else because their body mechanics just don't fit the mold of what a fish, you know, what we think that a fish should be. Cause like their whole body is like, they're like, you don't really know where their body and their tail begins and ends. It's just one big, like, lobe shaped oar of a body that the entire thing from the gills back moves. But it's a unique fight, but I think the spectacular part is the jumps. But I was curious what your experience with them swimming backwards was. The only time I ever saw it was the same. It's like they saw the net when I was trying to get the net, and they wanted to get away from the net. But I didn't know if you've actually experienced them fighting in reverse, like actively during the fight using that.
Yeah, you will. When they get close to the boat and they see the boat, they'll actually, and you're trying to pull them up, they'll wiggle their way and start going backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's pretty unique. I had a couple of weeks ago, I had a trip during one of our cold fronts that we recently had, and it shut down all the fishing except for the hybrid bass. And what surprised me was the clowns were, they fed all day. It was overcast all day, and caught a whole bunch of mess of clowns. And my clients, they were from Texas, and they had no idea clown knife fish even existed until the first one put in the boat. Mm. And they were pretty amazed at what those fish actually do. And they, even one of them pointed out, like, is that thing swimming backwards? I was like, yep, they do that. So they were pretty, it was an unexpected little surprise for them. They wanted to catch peacock bass, but the water temp was 64 degrees. And that's no bueno for the peacocks.
Yeah. Now, I'm kind of like picking your brains here because I have just tried and failed to catch them with lures. But like, are you using like low visibility leaders? Like, are they like leader shy or line shy or timid type of fish? Because I mean, I know their eyes are sort of situated. That's the other thing, that the structure of their head is really weird. Like their eyes are like up near the front of their mouth. The mouth is
flat,
very,
you know.
Yeah, the mouth is very small. Are you using like, I mean, what kind of gear are you using? I know they have like teeth, even on their tongue, they have like teeth, but, are you using like light tackle? Like what line class are you using? I mean, are you going pretty like light on gear, or what are you throwing at them? I wouldn't think you're using very big lures being that their mouth's kind of small, and you'd already sort of alluded, they eat predominantly, I guess, the little threadfin shad, but I mean, what's the ideal artificial lure, something mimics those shad?
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a few. So I mean, starting with kind of the tackle that you would want to use, typically what you target bass with, like largemouth, mm-hmm. or you know, if you're a Florida angler, peacocks, you're going to use that same type of rod. When it comes to lures, you know, medium heavy rod, somewhere in the 7 foot range is what I use. Medium heavy with a fast tip. And, you know, line size, I mean, all my rods that we're typically catching, that I run my charters on just in general, I use 10-pound braid and a 20-pound leader.
Okay.
And I haven't found that those fish are line shy. And really, when it comes down to it, the water in the Ida Osborne chain, it's not really clear. They keep spraying all of the hydrilla and all the grass, so the water just gets dirtier and dirtier. I really don't think they can see the line. They might feel it in some instances, but it hasn't I don't think it's prevented me from getting bites. But I like that 20-pound leader because when you get one of those things in your hand, you know, their jaw is kind of similar to a tarpon, where the actual jaw is very bony and it's just covered with a layer of skin.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, where it hinges from that fish's mouth, there's a membrane, and that's kind of the ideal place if you're going to, you know, hopefully hook one of these things. That's where you want your hook to end up, is in that membrane between the jaw and the fish's cheek muscles. But yeah, in terms of, you know, lures, anything with that's like in the 3-inch range, a popular lure down here is the 3-inch paddle tail by NLBN. That works really well.
Okay.
And I just, you know, anything that imitates a shad is what I'm using. So white or like a green and green back with silver belly, something like that. What I like as well is using a swim bait with an underspin. That works really well. That okay. extra vibration and thump.
Yeah.
I have caught them on crankbaits before. I've deep cranked a few, which is really weird. It's just that rod just loads up, and you actually, when they thump a lure, it feels like a tarpon. They suck it in really fast and hard. And so you'll feel a thump, and then the rod just instantly loads up, because when they eat, they take off running fat, like as fast as they could swim. So that's kind of the mainstay. You want like a 3-inch paddle tail, no more than 4 inches. Anything, you know, paddle tail with an underspin, or you can just use a regular jig hook. You can catch them on spinner baits. That's also very viable.
Okay.
I like spinner baits a lot more between May, end of May, June, July, August. Spinner baits work good because they're coming up more shallow to spawn in the grass. So you can use that in more grassy areas. Deep cranking them, you know, if you can graph them on those contours in the lake. And then, I mean, I've caught them on other stuff too, like chatterbaits. I've caught them on by accident when I'm trying to catch like largemouth.
So, you've caught them on all this stuff. I can't catch them. I think my problem is that I just stopped doing it. It'd help if I just try a little harder. But
you definitely got to put in the time. It helps being in the right areas as well. You know, like I said, the Ida-Osborne chain is where those fish are predominantly located. There's a couple connecting canals that you'll find them in, but I don't find that. I think they're just stockpiled in that system because of how much biomass is in there with, you know, the threadfin shad. There's also gizzard shad. Obviously, they can't eat one that's this big, but
yeah,
they can eat, you know, the smaller gizzards as well. There's just so much bait. It's ludicrous how much bait is in there. And that's how it can support all those clowns.
Yeah.
When you get into like the connecting waters and canals and stuff like that, you'll still find them, but definitely not as much. And they are harder to catch in the canals. It's really crazy.
That's like one of the weird things with them. Like, you know, you go back to this idea that they can take over, and I think it's sensationalized like headlines. It's an interesting read when you see these articles and stuff about them, because they got it.
There's not too many, but you know, they're out there.
Right. But it is what I've always thought was so weird when I come over there is like how like very specific the range is on where they live. Mm-hmm. Like that system. I'm like, what is keeping them from going north? What is keeping them from going south? I'm wondering if it's like climate based. I'm wondering if it's like you said, that's where the food is, but that seems interesting to me.
I mean, they're definitely a tropical fish, you know, just like peacock bass. They are going to be limited by the climate.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of brushed over kind of where they came from. Originally, they came from that southeastern Indochina Peninsula. Mm-hmm. It consists of Cambodia, Thailand, Laos, Vietnam. There's one other one, Burma. So mm-hmm. it's that lobe that's down there, and that's their home range. Obviously, the aquarium trade is what got them to United States. But in terms of, you know, that's like the Ida Osborne chain is kind of primarily where you'll find them. There's been some interesting reports. I have seen photos of, and this one was weird, man. I don't know how this happened, but you know, there'll be isolated reports throughout the state, the southeastern part of the state. And obviously they're making that way because people are transporting them.
Yeah. People moving them around. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've seen an Instagram post of a guy catching them on the saltwater side, butted up right against the lock of the St. Lucie River up there in like Stewart, which is just mind blowing to me. But that was like an isolated post. Really haven't seen anything else. You can find some in like the C-14 canal in Broward County. There's like, I haven't caught one yet. I've seen them out there, but they're not out there in any numbers. And there's a few places in Miami where you can catch them. But again, it's not like, if you want to come and catch one of these things, don't waste your time in Miami or the C-14. You just go to Delray Beach.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be a limit. And I think kind of, you know, upper in that Osborne chain going up into West Palm Beach is like the upper limit. You're really not going to see them much farther past that. And that, you know, I think also is that those systems have deep enough water to where, you know, they can kind of stay in that thermal climate and find some consistent warm water. But I have seen them in colder climates or colder months. I have seen quite a few floating, so they definitely can't withstand like super cold temperatures for a long period of time.
Yeah, because that was the next thing I was curious about. I was like, how are they handling? I mean, cold by Florida standards. I mean, this time of year, we're getting some spells where it's dipped down, and I think we'll see that until like mid-March or so.
Maybe. You know, I think you're a little bit, you're like on the West Coast and a little farther north than me, right?
I actually might be more south. I'm in Naples. So
okay,
I'm
gonna, equal.
But
Naples gets colder than Southeast Florida for whatever reason, but we're like, you know, this so far, you know, knock on wood, this has been a pretty mild winter for us.
And,
you know, I like the cold weather. I was born in New Jersey, so it's still a little bit in my blood, but you know, especially now as a full-time guide, I like having more mild winters just because that's, you know, my bread and butter is the peacock bass.
Yeah.
So last year in January, we had two back-to-back cold fronts. I mean, the water temps got down into the 50s. I don't know if it touched 49 degrees, but it got so cold and there were a lot of floating peacock in certain areas. Other areas weren't even impacted, which was great. Because it made the past 2023 season was great for me. But yeah, I think we're hopefully on the other side of the hill when it comes to any more cold fronts.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned the guiding business, and that side of it I thought was really interesting. Like how long have you been doing that? Is that like a full-time deal? Is this a side gig, or are you just all in on guiding at this point in time?
Yeah. Well, yes to all of that. But the guiding story is kind of interesting. You know, I had a full-time job for 13 years. I was a marketing manager for an e-commerce, and I was going out fishing every day after work, and you know, fishing almost every weekend depending on, you know, my relationship status and you know, when I was in a relationship, what the girlfriend was doing at the time. Because obviously you got to put in time for that. But I mean, I was fishing all the time. And, you know, even growing up as a kid, the fishing guide thing always intrigued me because, you know, just as like a regular weekend warrior angler, you can go out and if you get skunked, it's no big deal. You know, you just go out the next day. Whereas like that pressure's on you when you're a guide. And it always intrigued me. I was like, holy crap, how are these guides doing this? Like they have to catch fish, you know?
Yeah.
They have to. What happens if they don't catch fish? So it always intrigued me, but I never really thought of it as a career until about 10 years ago. You know, I've been so fortunate to meet a bunch of good guides and kind of have a nice close circle of guide friends that have kind of shown me the path and helped me out along the way. And one of those guides, Captain Shane Procell, that I met 10 years ago, maybe more, I went out fishing with him just because I wanted to kind of see what it was all about. I had been catching, peacock bass and all that stuff on my own for a while, but I just wanted to book a guide, and just have like a day of fishing and really get into, some good fishing on a boat, which I had never really had the opportunity to do. And, I ended up booking Shane like 2 or 3 times, and, it really got me thinking like, man, I'm eat up with fishing. Like, I think maybe I can make the guide thing work. It really started to become an interest to me. And I, at that point, I just had to figure out, well, I've got this full-time job, which is more or less at that point, it was like a career. How do I transition to become a full-time guide? So, it took me kind of a while to figure it out. Finally got a boat, and I made it known that I wanted to guide, and I was only guiding on the weekends. Just that's the only time I was available, because Monday through Friday I'm locked into my job. And I ran a few trips like that, but I kept getting phone calls from people like, "Hey, I'm going to be in town Tuesday. Can we go?" I'm like, sorry, I have a full-time job,
Yeah.
So I have to, refer them to Shane or Scott or someone. And yeah, it kind of sucked. So I've been guiding. So that was 4 years ago I started guiding. And my whole mindset to start that was, well, I'm going to start a YouTube channel and maybe hope, or in hopes to attract like-minded people that kind of are into what I'm doing. So this way I have an audience to market my business to when I finally do take that leap. And it kind of, it worked not as fast as I had wanted to at first, but I ended up the day I announced that, my services are available to guide. I had my captain's license in the mail. You can legally hire me, and I won't get in trouble if I get caught.
Yeah.
I actually had, a great couple, Ian and Lacey, hit me up. And, they drove, these guys are nuts. they booked the trip. They live in Ocala. So that's, and where I was, where the bite was hot that I wanted to take them was way down south in Miami. Mm. So they drove, they woke up at, I don't even know what time, drove all 5 hours, probably more than that, probably like close to 6, all the way down into deep south Miami, fished. And then they got back in their car and drove home that same day.
Jeez.
Which was nuts. We had an awesome day. Ian ended up catching like close to a 6-pound peacock. Mm. And, we boated a whole bunch more. But that was my first ever guide trip. And I was like, yep, I'm doing this. This is it for me. So, yeah, that was 4 years ago. And finally, in May of 2022, that's when I took the leap, left my full-time job, and made myself available to guide full time. And, it's been really difficult. Like I said, I've been fortunate enough to have, Shane Procell, and then, another guide, Scott Rose. I've known him for just about as long. We're great friends. And without those guys and, the help of my family, I would not be able to be where I'm at now, without them. So super, super grateful, and I'm lucky to have those people in my life. And it's super hard, and I'll do it all over again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I always get interested, the guys that kind of run into that, I don't know if I want to say crossroads, but when you've got a comfortable job or like a job where money's guaranteed, let's say, or just about guaranteed, to leave that, it seems like a scary prospect. But most of the guys that I've talked to have been like, no, it wasn't scary at all. I was ready to do it. But I guess if you're calculated and you're smart and you're measured and you've got good buddies that are in it that you can sort of draw inspiration from or get guidance from in some sort, that's probably helpful than just a shot in the dark or making brash decisions and just cannonballing into something without a real game plan in place. But
everybody's process is different when they're starting a guide business. But, you know, I mean, I've seen and I follow some guides that just seem to, like, you know, as soon as they opened it up, they're just, you know, they're getting booked left and right, which, you know, is, you know, kudos to those guys.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't the case for me. You don't, like, I feel like that's how it is for most people, where you can't, you don't just, like, start a Facebook page and then instantly get booked. Like, it's, you know, so there's a bit of unknown when it comes to becoming a guide, because you don't know how often you're going to get a trip, when that first trip's even going to come. So yeah, you just got to grind and work hard, and you're like 10 different roles all wrapped up into one person.
Yeah. Well, what, so like, what does a typical day look like? A day on the water with you? What does that, you know, typically look like? I guess it depends on what the customer wants, what kind of fish they want, but, you know, what is the experience typically like? Are you looking to, like, get the slam on, like, let's get a snakehead, a clown knife fish, and a peacock bass? Or some people are like, I only want to catch peacock bass, or I only want to catch snakeheads, or I only want big fish. Or you just sort of tailor it to whatever they want, or are most people pretty open-minded, like, let's just go catch some fish?
Yeah, all of, yes.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can answer
that. Good
to
be versatile.
But yeah, it all, for the most part, most trips start out, you know, the number one fish that people, you know, are coming down here for is the peacock bass.
Yeah, that's what I figured,
and that's the bulk of my clients, not the bulk, but 100% of my clients are all coming from out of town, which I think is absolutely great. I don't know if I would take any local people. I've had a few horror stories, and even an angler admit something to me. Yeah, I won't say exactly who he did, but, you know him anyway, but he gained a lot of spots from a local guy that he booked. And he said, he even told me, like, yeah, I booked this guy and now I have all these great spots. I'm like, oh, geez.
Oh, man.
You know, and he showed interest in booking me for some peacock bass. And, you know, fortunately I haven't had to turn him down. He hasn't asked me yet, but when that day comes, it's probably going to happen. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you got to protect your business. It's my livelihood. So
yeah,
most of the clients, they're coming from out of town, and the phone call typically starts, you're like, hey, I'm going to be staying here and we want to go and catch peacock bass. You know, that's, the peacocks are the number one species. And then, you know, I start asking them questions about their fishing experience. And, you know, more often than not, we're going to be using, you know, live shiners, which oddly enough, my two upcoming trips I have in a day, they specifically only want to catch lures, and I'm all for it. Like, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I let them know, like, hey, it's wintertime in Florida. Not exactly the best time to target a tropical fish from the Amazon, but,
yeah,
you know, I've got some tricks up my sleeve. We're going to get it done. And, you know, I just let them know, like, hey, you're going to be working for it. And they're like, yep, we want lures. We're good to go. We'll fish all day. No problem. Like, so that's great. And that's how most people get it. That it's fishing, not catching, and you got to put in the work. But that's typically how it starts, is they specifically want a certain species. It's very rare that I actually get anyone that says, like, I just want to go fishing. It's pretty rare. And I think that all comes down to the niche that I fit in, like you were mentioning. It is kind of like a niche thing, this, like, Southeast Florida freshwater deal. But yeah, and then, you know, depending on where their client's staying, like, cause I service everywhere from, like, Homestead all the way up into West Palm Beach and everything in between. So I can fish anyone throughout that range, which is like something like 100 miles, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, which is, again, just comes down to time on the water and, you know, having like a real tight group of guide friends too, where we're all sharing different, you know, reports and everything. Like, if the fishing's really bad in, like, one area, you know, we'll kind of let everybody know, like, hey, you know, the Everglades right now sucks. We're catching nothing but Oscars, no peacocks. So we'll kind of, you know, say, all right, well, keep, give us a heads up when you try this spot or that spot. So that, that's really helpful to know. Cause I've had some days where I've been let down by some of the invasive Oscars out there in the Glades.
Yeah.
They're pretty rough. Especially right now, they're getting ready to spawn here in the next like month or two. So they're just like fired up, and man, especially on a live bait trip, you can go out there and you, your client pays for 15 dozen shiners and, you know, 10 dozen get gobbled up by these Oscars. Like it's a tough trip, especially when they're expecting like peacocks. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of, you know, it's more, species based. And then sometimes I get some clients that want to do some, they'll see some of my posts about doing the like intercoastal stuff and catching the tarpon on the dock lights and snook and whatnot.
Okay.
So that kind of, sometimes I'll do one of those trips. Really depends on the angler. Cause that's like, that's angling. That's not just like tossing a bait out and hoping you get lucky. Cause those,
right,
you got to time the tides right and know how to lead the fish. And it really takes a little more skill, especially cause I'm doing that artificial only.
Yeah. Yeah. No, now I know the snakehead has been kind of a big one for you lately, just in looking through your YouTube channel, looking through your, I mean, seeing you with Justin, your like observation on the demand on that species been, has that been one where you have been able to witness kind of a growing demand in the species, or people's perception obviously is like, you know, it's, that's like when you think of invasive fish in North America, that's sort of been like the poster child for like the shock and horror fish. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's a massive culture of it down here. Yeah. Now it's become like, you know, there's whole groups around it, but are you getting more demand from people from out of state or from further away that want specifically to catch snakeheads? I mean, the peacock bass, I get it. You know, it's like a tropical version of a largemouth bass. There's like, there's enough parallels there to where it speaks to what most people's interest is. But are you getting more people saying, I want to come catch a bullseye snakehead?
Yeah, I definitely am, for sure. And the people that usually ask me are like, they're pretty hardcore anglers. Every once in a while, somebody's just heard of it and wants to go out and catch a bunch of peacocks and snakehead, which is totally doable. I try and steer them towards one or the other, because there's not too many systems where you can, I don't want to say a guarantee, but the likelihood of catching both and in any decent amount of numbers is, it's pretty rare. They definitely cross habitate for sure. But yeah, you know, what I find that the snakeheads are kind of in very specific areas, and it's a specific type of fishing compared to, you know, going after peacocks. But I am getting quite a few people that just want to catch snakeheads, and it's pretty awesome. You know, the peacocks are still, I think that more people are interested in the peacock bass because, I mean, obviously they're not a bass, it's a cichlid, but because it's peacock bass, it gets on more people's radar. And they've been around in the United States, obviously, a lot longer. Since 1984 is when FWC released the first batch into the C100 canal in Miami. And it was like, they marketed it pretty well to where they don't have to market it anymore to get people to come into state and get their vacations to target these things.
Yeah, that's become something of the, like, the North American, you know, part of like the bucket list for North American, at least freshwater anglers. It's like, you gotta do the South Florida peacock bass thing. Now, what I'm interested in, like with these snakeheads, is Justin has come down from Virginia to fish with you. Has he reciprocated yet? Have you gone up and done the northern snakehead thing yet? Because now we're talking about the service that you have provided and taken other people fishing. But I'm kind of curious on like, what fishing do you do for yourself? Like on your days off, I mean, you're servicing all these people, but when you get to have time to yourself, what is like your fishing? Have you gone up and entertained the northern snakehead thing yet?
Yeah, not yet. We definitely have plans in the works to go and do that. you know, he's got his eye on the tide books because he wants to get like a double tide swing. So we get like the most time on the water possible.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm going to have to take my fish oil pills to keep the joints lubricated. Cause that's going to be a lot of fishing, man. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We're going to definitely make that happen. Hopefully this year. I'm looking forward to that. In terms of kind of what I like to do, you know, everybody asks me what my favorite fish is to target. And I don't have an answer to that. There's no
yeah,
the answer.
That's a hard one to answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Like even people have asked me like, okay, your last day is tomorrow. What are you going to go catch? I'm like, man, I don't know what's biting.
Yeah. You know,
I have fishing ADD. I'm just down for, you know, anything. But typically what I've been gravitating to more because, you know, the freshwater thing I've been doing my whole life, it's my ride or die. Love it. We'll always do it. You know, I think the evolution of my freshwater fishing, I kind of take it to like the next level. So, you know, the past few years I've been big into fly fishing. So I've been, you know, the same type of fishing that I do for, you know, bass, peacocks, even snakeheads. I've attempted it a couple times without success, but to toss a fly at them, I mean, that's just like the next like expert level in my opinion. But then, you know, if I'm just going out for a day of fishing, I'm going to try and do like some form of saltwater fishing, go chase after tarpon, go down to Florida Bay, chase after some redfish, or, you know, head into Biscayne Bay, go for permit or bonefish.
Yeah.
I think the problem is where I live or where we live, there's just so much you can do within a short distance. It's like, oh, do you want to go, you know, me, obviously I'm going to be tossing artificial at them. So I'm a light tackle angler. So it's like, hey, do you want to go target the juvenile Goliath grouper in shallow water and go down to like Everglades City? No problem. Yeah. That's only takes me an hour and a half to get there. Or, you know, it's like right now where the shrimp run just started in Miami. So, hey, do you potentially want to catch 150 pound tarpon? No problem. That's 30 yeah. minutes. Down. It's nuts. The amount of opportunity and angling experiences that are here is just, it's so amazing. And that's also what I want to eventually open up my guide business to, you know, is like maybe doing that Everglades City 10,000 Islands trip and offering that to, you know, some repeat clients. Like right now I am open to taking those Miami, tarpon trips at night and, you know, hopefully just expand it a little further, get some more stuff in my wheelhouse. And, but right now I kind of just keep that for myself just to get it extra dialed in. So when I do have the opportunity to take someone, I'm going to give them the best chance of success as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. We have it rough down here. It's a good problem to have when you like can't decide what kind of fish you want to go chase. But you've mentioned a few times your YouTube channel and starting a YouTube channel and, you know, using that to promote the guide service and just, you know, and that side of things. But like, so like, what is the channel? Like, where can people find that? What is the YouTube channel? What's the nature of the content? Like, kind of videos are you doing? Are you pretty regularly posting on there? I know I've watched a few of them and it's good stuff.
I haven't been posting as regular as I like to. It's really tapered off. But yeah, I mean, you just go on YouTube and type in Flobass, FLOBASS. I'll pop up. When I first started that channel, I was kind of wanting to, you know, grow it as fast as possible. So I was kind of riding the hype train a little bit of some other YouTube fishermen doing these kind of, I guess you could say gimmicky videos or challenges and things like that. That was, man, we're almost approaching like 10 years ago. Yeah. Holy cow. But you know, that was like, when I started it that long ago, I knew that eventually the pinnacle of that channel was to market people, my, you know, the experiences that I can offer them as a guide.
Yeah.
So, you know, it started out like that and then just kind of transitioned into just, you know, going out and fishing and kind of showcasing and taking the viewer along in that experience that I'm experiencing. That's kind of where, you know, it's at right now. Every once in a while, I'll just post like a random how-to video if I've got nothing else to do. Like the biggest video on my channel, which maybe I should take the hint and change my channel to this type of content. But I, you know, I had a duck boat and I bought a brand new Yamaha 25 horsepower tiller motor. Mm-hmm. And the funny part is when you buy one of those motors, it comes in a box. And it's like, well, why don't I do an unboxing video? Like who the heck unboxes a boat motor, you know? Yeah. So I did that. And that thing, like a couple weeks ago, just surpassed 1 million views.
Oh, geez. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's, you know, every time I do like a boat related video, like a top speed test or, you know, how to restore the paint on your outboard, things like that. Like those videos blow up. But you know, I don't have the equity to start producing that type of content over and over on a regular basis. But you know, but I'm more interested in, you know, being a guide and fishing. So that's, you know, I would, if I only made that boat content, I'd be pretty miserable, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not enjoying what you're doing, you just need to stop. But that's awesome. Yeah. Well, Eric, where else can people find you? Because I know we've mentioned your guide service. You know, and I know a lot of people that are interested in clown knife fish, peacock bass, obviously snakeheads, but you know, mutual friend Justin's already come down and fished with you. But like, if people want to reach out to you, maybe they're planning on coming this summer. How do they find you? Instagram, personal website. We've already mentioned your YouTube channel, the guide service information. How do they find you?
Yeah. I mean, best way to find me, you know, on Facebook and social media, Instagram as well. It's at flo.bass. That's FLO.BASS. I'll come right up. You can probably type in Captain Eric Planer as well. I'll come right up. But yeah, my website's flobass.com. And I kind of list kind of the gamut of what I do and give you a good idea of what to expect the day out on the water and where I go and what we target. And then, of course, you know, YouTube, flobass. Pretty easy to find, and be happy to chat up anybody. If you want to shoot me a message and get a better idea of what it's all about and, you know, how I can better tailor a trip to best suit your needs, I'm down for it. You know, that's if anybody's awesome. Coming down to target clown knife fish, we're using live bait. Don't expect to catch them on artificial, yeah. But you know, I'm happy to give that a shot, but you guys are going to be in for an interesting time for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a cool one. That's one everybody's got to try to experience. I would dare to say that might be my favorite. I don't know. It's between the snakehead and the clown knife fish, but I think I might put the clown knife fish as like right now, you know, that changes with the moods, my favorite exotic species in the state. But, Eric, man, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to jump in on you. I was going to say the clown knife, there's a pretty big contrast between catching clown knives and snakeheads. You've got, you know, the snakeheads are going to be more of a visual type of deal. And it's almost, you can think of it as you're hunting that fish.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, clown knife fish is more your traditional style fishing, might be a little slower paced, but, you know, when you hook up, they're acrobatic and so unique. They're crazy looking fish. It's just, they're aliens.
Yeah. So it's definitely a different experience. It's more like the opportunity to encounter something weird with the clown knife fish. Like just to say, oh, look at this unique, different fish that like doesn't fit the cookie mold of what a fish should be. Then the snakehead is more like the exhilaration of the pursuit, I think. But anyway, to each their own. But man, yeah, I've appreciated. Oh yeah. Well, I've appreciated getting you on here, and we don't live too far apart. I mean, I think the next time I plan on coming over there, I thought about coming over there actually on Friday, but now it's looking like I might do something different, maybe some shark fishing or something a little bit more local. But for sure, next time I'm over in your neck of the woods, I'll have to give you a heads up. Who knows? Maybe we can cross paths. You can show me a thing or two. Maybe I can figure out how to catch these freaking clown knife fish on a lure. But
yeah, I'm down to try them. And that's, you know, when I typically go out fishing for those things. That's where I'm at. Like, I want to catch them on artificial, and I'm ready to grind it out and get one of those things in the boat on a swim bait or a crank bait or whatever. You know, I don't know if my heart can take watching those things jump with a crankbait flopping around their mouth, but you know, I'm down for it, man. So yeah, if you're coming to my neck of the woods, hit me up.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your time. I'm going to throw all the links up on the screen here, down in the description. Anybody that's interested in learning more or potentially booking a trip, couldn't recommend you any higher. The stuff that I've seen is awesome. The fish you catch speak for themselves. But Eric, I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, no, thanks for the kind words, man. And I appreciate coming on the podcast. It was a privilege.
Yeah, dude. Have a good one, all right?
You too, brother.
Yeah, thank you for listening to Boundless Pursuit. Tune in each week as we bring stories and insight from uniquely talented anglers and outdoorsmen. And if you enjoyed this show, I want to hear from you. Be sure to leave a 5-star review, as this is going to drive the growth and exposure of this show. And if you have feedback or guest suggestions, I would love to hear from you. And you can reach me at boundlesspursuitfishing@gmail.com. For all other collections of media and contact information, please visit www.boundless-pursuit.com.